Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Hey there.
How's everybody?
Prowl.
And Prowl.
Right. Prowl's here.
If you can, if you look on the YouTubes for this episode, this is episode number 221, I think. Check out our lovely Prowl, and he's got Japanese writing on his door. So is this a
Cybertronian?
Cybertronian.
Ooh, yeah,
I just saw it out of the corner of my eye. Cool. So how is everybody?
Well, it's a sad day.
It is a sad day.
Sad day today.
News broke today as we record this that Peter Mayhew, the actor inside the mask of Chewbacca, passed away today.
Mm-hmm. 79.
Something like that.
Yeah. Maybe he wasn't that old. We need to double check. I posted on Facebook today when I saw the posting that he died. I have this fond memory of Peter Mayhew, and I was at a party at Wizard World Con, and he was sitting at a table and by himself, and that was back in the days where you could actually smoke inside a building, and I walked up and I was a pretty heavy smoker at that time, and I walked up and I asked him for a light, and I said thank you, and I didn't, you know, he's a very quiet man, so I didn't chit chat, and I also
didn't Chewbacca roar at you.
No, and I didn't want to pester him either, because I kind of felt like he's inundated with people all day long on the convention floor. He just seemed to be enjoying himself, drinking his drink and watching people. And I walked away, and my girlfriend at the time said, "Who is that huge man?" I said, "That's Peter Mayhew. That's Chewbacca." And she's like, "Well, how do you know?" And I looked at her, and I'm like, "I know. I know.
It is known.
It is known." It is
because
known.
If you were like, a Star "Do you even Wars know fan, me?"
You know what the people look who wear those costumes. Yeah, exactly. Have you ever? Yeah,
yeah, seriously.
But social security number as well.
I knew all those people look like, you know, out of their costumes and makeup. So of course I knew that was him, and of course that's why I went over and bummed a light from him. So
do you think that Peter Mayhew and David Prowse ever had tall offs to decide who
I'm
was taller?
Sure they did. I'm sure they did.
There's no good reason, but in my mental picturing of your story, he's wearing the Chewbacca costume. Even though there's no reason why he would be, but it just kind of makes it.
With
better.
His eyes all blacked out.
Yeah. he doesn't. He just doesn't have the mask on, and he's just like, meh, smoking.
He was wearing I believe he was wearing a plaid T-shirt that, like, all four of us could have fit into, you know? Actually, he's a very lean man, but super duper tall.
Right.
And his size, was one of the causes of his health issues.
Mm. All right, so I'm going to go home and watch all the Star Wars movies. Before we move on, let's talk about what's coming up at the Comics Dungeon and Corner Comics these days. What's happening, friends?
Well, we just survived Free Comic Book Day,
that's
so
right.
I think I'm just going to slip into a coma for a while. And no, actually, I'm just dead. This is coming from beyond the grave now. And we don't really have any plans. We do have a book club coming up. It's going to be The Immortal Hulk.
Mm-hmm. When is this posted?
This will be the Monday after Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, yeah.
So it's coming up.
Yep.
And
so we're pretending there's an aftermath that we haven't even.
Yeah. Don't tell them how the sausage is made.
No idea how.
We're pretending Free Comic Book Day was great, but it was exhausting. But we made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we haven't aftermathed yet. Anyway, keep going, Chris. I'm sorry.
That's about it. You know, we're just gonna be prepping soon for our anniversary sale this summer,
mm-hmm.
More book clubs and stuffs.
Yep. Book clubs are usually third Fridays, but you can feel free to join the Facebook group. I think it's like Comics Dungeon Book Club or something.
Yeah.
The Immortal Hulk will be May 17th, Friday from 7 to 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all going to probably cry because it's just a beautiful comic and we're just so in love. Everyone's so excited for this one. So.
So far it is one of our, it's in our top 10 bestsellers of the year so far.
Wow.
The trade paperback. So yes, doing very well.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
All right. Cool. Well, in other sad news, Lone Wolf and Cub creator Kazuo Koike also passed away. Lone Wolf and Cub is a title that I've only recently heard of, but it's, you know, Cole, you brought it up to my attention.
How many volumes are there? It's like 26, 32?
Which version of the printing?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when Dark Horse, so you're really good point. I tried to read them when Epic Comics tried to print them
in comic format
in the most asinine thing to do, which is try to print it in a comic format and then split them up into 22 or 25 page arcs, which was ridiculous.
Don't quite work out.
Nope. And then Dark Horse printed them in the...
They were like tiny pocket, size.
Tiny pocket which
was,
size.
Was that not closer to the way they originally were printed?
I'm not entirely sure about that.
But you read them back to front, so that was significant.
Yeah, and there was like 26 or 27 of those. Now they have slightly bigger, fatter omnibus editions, which I think are up to volume 10 or 11
or
something.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Plus the new Lone Wolf and Cubs, and then their Samurai Executioner as well, which is part of the same world.
So I think it's the prequel. I think that's
it's kind of a Dirkquel. I think it takes place
like during
like volume 4 or 5 of one of the versions or
but
something.
But it's when he still is the samurai
he's still
executioner.
Alive. Yes.
And he's still well, and he's also when he was before he became a wandering Ronin, he and I'm trying to remember the characters' names now and I can't remember.
So had he actually completed the story or was he in the middle of the new Lone Wolf stuff?
I thought they were done, but don't quote me on that because I haven't caught up to the new I kind of went on a hiatus and I sold all my tiny versions and I haven't bought back the big versions yet. What I just do is I go watch the movies.
Dagoro is the son, but I can't remember his name. Forgive me, constant listeners, I screwed up. But I have never read Crying Freeman. I've never read that.
I have some sets at Corner Comics if you're interested.
Do you really?
Yeah, they're very nicely priced.
There's also the Lady Snowblood comics as well.
And I have not read that either.
Those are good. Okay. Kill Bill is essentially Lady Snowblood.
Yeah, it says there's an article here from AV Club that he was a very influential instructor, establishing the Koike Gekiga Sonjuku training school for manga creators. And yeah, big influence on Tomosaburo Wakayama and inspired the likes of Frank Miller and Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to have, it's been a while and I need to go rewatch movies. There's a very interesting circle of life thing about Tarantino, the movies, Kill Bill, but also Zatoichi, the Blind Swordsman, which is one of my favorite things ever. And the actor Shintaro Katsu, who is Zatoichi, is the brother of the guy who played Lone Wolf in Lone Wolf and Cub. That's not the character's real name. And the actor who was in Lone Wolf and Cub went to Kazukoki's house and like kind of begged him for the role. And he showed up with like a samurai sword and like showed all his fancy moves and went into his backyard and started doing like showing him like, I could do this, even though he wasn't like the best build for it. So there's just like an interesting sets of influences and connectivities because I'm pretty sure he also wrote scripts for some Zatoichi's, but he also wrote scripts for the Lone Wolf and Cub movies, and which were condensed into one American film called Shogun Assassin, which is the movie that they're watching at the end of Kill Bill with a little girl.
So it's Ogami Ito and Dagoro is the son in the pushcart. So yeah, pushcart assassin. And there was a TV series that ran for a long time in Japan, and you can, it's hard to track. I tried to track some of those down decades ago, and I think they had some of the discs on Netflix, but I'm sure people wandered off with them because they're not easy to get your hands on. And there's also numerous movies.
Have you tried Scarecrow in Seattle?
Scarecrow?
Yes, they are a nonprofit video rental and store.
That's a wonderful idea, Nicole. Thank you.
They're great.
Yeah.
They have a lot of import and out of print material. That you can rent for very cheap.
This episode brought to you by Scarecrow Video. Visit us.
Give us a shout out.
They didn't pay anything, but we love them.
Yep. Yep.
Video store standing.
Koike was inducted into the Will Eisner Hall of Fame in 2004. He was 82. So, there you go. No more Lone Wolf. Actually, did he... was he the only one doing Lone Wolf and Cub, or did that become like a franchise?
There was some weird things. Like Dark Horse did like a Lone Wolf and Cub 2100 or something like that, where they just kind of took the idea and pushed it into the future.
So I'm make it a Blade Runner-esque kind of thing.
Yes.
I think I made it through the first issue.
But otherwise, I think it's kind of, it's done. It's it. as far as I comprehend it. Yeah, no legacy, which I kind of like.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah.
I like things that are done.
Yeah.
And don't get remastered a billion ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So every year, GLAAD Media awards an award to a comic, an outstanding comic book for LGBTQIA+ in that field. And there were a number of nominees. Batwoman was one of them. Mm-hmm. Bingo Love, Fence, and Iceman, among others. But the one that won was The Snackopus Chronicles from Mark Russell.
Of course it did. Well, of course it did. Because that was like, did you make a sneery face, Nicole?
It wouldn't have been my personal pick, but that's fine. Okay. I am not the person who gets those awards.
Well, you know, don't sneery face on my moment of joy.
Oh.
So.
I'm covering my face for those listening. Yes? Well,
yes, sir.
For the positive, Cole.
Yes.
You liked it, and you think it was a worthy winner.
I do, but, you know, Nicole has a valid...
I gave you a platform. Yes. Nicole, right. Which would you have preferred when the...
Stories that push things into the future as opposed to looking backwards. Not that that's a bad thing. Mm. However, I feel like we can do more with our gayness these days, and so I like seeing that stuff happen.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of, like, Kim and Kim.
You were a fan of Bingo Love because that is a forward momentum
story.
It
is also a forward momentum, even though it does the past. As well. So that's my personal thing, because we have had commentary. We know, if you know anything about gay comics, they were always like tragic and that sort of stuff. And he was playing with that in Snagglepuss. However, it's just not my jams. That's all. Like, I'd rather almost just read history if I was going to go backwards, because then I would gain something of the reality of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Well, yeah. Exit Stage left the Snagglepuss Chronicles.
Debate.
Exactly. Debate over. Moving on. All right. Let's also move on. Library of Congress is planning on digitizing everything. And I thought this was significant because it means that all of the comics they have in their library are going to be available for free through the Library of Congress. Mm-hmm. Now, are classic comics, are like, you know, Golden Age, Silver Age stuff, that's, you know, are, is that stuff available for free legitimately these days?
If you get it through the library,
you have to go to a library and like white glove a copy of Superman number one or whatever.
Oh, so
no,
you're
just
talking.
Like in reprint format.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
You're able to read. I mean, I guess that's good. That's a whole different thing. It's actually touching the physical artifact, but being able to read the stories is available.
Yes, in some point, there's a lot of digitized versions as well.
Yeah,
A lot of things have been archived. Then some of it's public domain, some of it's not. Depends if you got, like, I think the DC Digital Service now just put in a crap load of comics.
Yeah.
So some of that's Golden Age as well.
Not free, but still available many ways, many capacities.
The one thing that I thought would be interesting is a great many number of original Steve Ditko Spider-Man pages were allegedly donated to the Library of Congress because he may or may not wanted to keep them away from collectors' hands. Steve Ditko, I love him for that, where
it sounds
he's just
like
screw all of you.
The very Ditko-esque thing to do.
So if they would scan the original Steve Ditko artwork so we can see what that is, that's pretty cool.
Well, if you had the opportunity to go to the MoPop exhibit, the Marvel exhibit, you got to see some of these original illustration boards that looked like they were drawn yesterday. They were absolutely pristine because they'd either been in his storage or someone else's storage and were anonymously donated to the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Speaking of Steve Ditko, a lot of his self-published works are being collected for the bookstore market.
We're a bookstore, too.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It might be available for us. Who knows?
Eventually. But right now it says Amazon and Barnes & Nobles.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think you'd have any takers for that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
This stuff? Yeah.
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 There's so many of these
stream.
Yeah, the super weird Steve Ditko stuff.
Libertarian.
It just, for just curiosity's sake, people would be like, I want to see that weird stream of consciousness coming out of Ditko onto these pages.
It's not just that, though. It's the Ayn Randian
No, I know. Oh, yeah. But I still feel like there would be a market.
Give you an idea of how people are willing to allow that stuff into their collections. Dave Sim just took the final plunge into Pure Insanity and is soliciting some horribly not good looking, anti-LGBTQ looking stuff.
Yeah.
And I still have people pre-ordering it. And I'm like, okay, I'm just not ordering shelf copies. They're like, no. And I feel kind of bad, but I need to. I've been getting all his stuff. So, like, even though some of these people go insane, people still buy Frank Miller. They'll still get this stuff, you know. So
case in point.
Yeah. It's not aware of the Dave Sim stuff.
Oh, it hasn't been published yet. Yeah. I'll show you that solicitation.
Okay. Yeah, it's for those who want to know. It was April solicitation, right? Wait, are we in May?
We're in May. It was April solicitation.
So you can look at Previews World for that probably.
And what was the gist of this? Is it a series?
Oh,
is it a book?
I don't.
I'll tell you later.
Yeah.
All right.
If you're curious, internet it.
Anyway, this isn't something that Ditko actually planned himself, and he just passed away during the process. His collaborator, Robin Snyder, is spearheading this whole thing. It's going to be called The 32 Series, and it's a 5-volume set to bring the vast majority of Ditko's lost work back into print.
Because prior to that, he was using Robin to do the mail order thing where he would just ship it out to people who were interested?
She kickstarted for him.
Yeah.
A lot of that just kind of went out that way.
Yeah.
So anyway, go into your local comic book store and tell them to pressure the publisher to
don't do that.
Deliver that, not just to your Amazons and your Barnes & Nobles.
We have no power over them.
If you can find a way to contact them and bug them yourself, that'd be great, because we're really busy.
All right. Don't go to your comic book store. Go to the publisher themselves.
Instead, just give me a pre-order sheet and I will love you forever.
Yeah.
And finally, speaking of things that are may or may not be published, Doomsday Clock number 10 can't seem to hit the shelves. Doomsday Clock number 10 can't seem to hit the shelves.
You know, it's
in a
good thing people like you, Doomsday Clock, because you'd Sandman so fast.
Yeah.
Everyone would just forget you exist.
Currently, and this is updated as of mid to late April, but number 10 might hit the shelves on May 22nd, which is this Tuesday as this is being recorded. Do we have any? Do we feel that might actually happen, or is it on your order sheet?
Yeah, I don't know. It just shows up when it shows up.
Do you not actually? So here's my question to you all as retailers: do you you order stuff, but are you just like, is this going to be a pleasant surprise if it's in the box come Tuesday night?
Well, so it'll show up on our final order cutoff, which is a thing we do every Thursday-ish, depends. And it allows us to alter our numbers 2 to 3 weeks before the arrival of the books. So that'll be our idea that it will potentially show up. I've had books show up on the FOC for 2 months in a row. And it's just like, that book's like always on the way for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
This has been 12 weeks. So we'll get a better idea sooner or later. I think it was on my last FOC, maybe. Should actually be kind of soon now.
It's not the last one of the series, is it?
No, it's going to be a 12-er.
12? Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Here we go.
I thought they extended it to 14 or 16. I'm being a jerk
right
now.
I hope not.
Doomsday Clock number 11 was originally scheduled to be May 22nd, so it's getting pushed back when...
Yeah.
Anyway.
They found a scribble that Alan Moore did in his castle, and they decided to incorporate it into Doomsday Clock.
Pretty much. So basically, this is worth mentioning. At some point, people are always talking about, what do we call the next era of comics? Because we're, golden, silver, bronze, and then modern. But, the last one's always modern, so the 90s was modern or whatever. 90s now get kind of called the Dark Ages as a joke. It's not official.
Yeah.
But the 2000s...
I get that.
Yeah. The 2000s, I saw somebody online put up the college years. It's, you have a lot of good ideas, but you're not always getting them papers in on time.
They're still working. Yeah, working it out.
And you're not listening to constructive feedback.
I think that we're actually looking into the tinfoil hat period of Comic-Con. I think I'm going to make that a thing. This was the tinfoil hat period of comics.
All right. Well, I was wrong in my dates. 22nd isn't this coming Tuesday. It's in a couple weeks because this episode's coming out on May 6th. But that's neither here nor there. I doubt anybody got confused. Let's move on to book report, everybody.
Now they have to erase it in their daily planner.
Cole Hornaday, what do you want to tell us about?
Oh, okay. Way to blindside me, Ben Lawrence.
Every time.
Whoa.
I want to talk about Fearscape, which is one of the many really extraordinary titles coming out of Vault Comics. I popped by the Vault Comics booth when I was at Emerald City Comic Con and did what I haven't done in years, which is to chat up creators and publishers and also see how well they... how well they hit me up and upsell, and the publisher was doing a great job. So I picked up Fearscape. Fearscape is a really unusual title. Have you been reading it?
Not yet.
Okay. So I'm going to read my notes here because I get easily flabbergasted by this, or Twitter-pated, or my words dry up by this point in the evening. So Fearscape is a story of a gent named Henry Henry, and he's a would-be writer and pompous sociopath who apes Oscar Wilde in his speech and demeanor. Henry Henry has not one original story in him. So he steals the manuscript from his mentor, and his mentor's name is Arthur Proctor, who is a best-selling author, while Proctor is lying on his deathbed. Now, in the meantime, there's this space that is part of human consciousness called the Fearscape, and it's populated with all of our manifestations of all our cultural, societal worst fears. And once a generation, the muse, and that's the Greek muse, she comes to find a new protector or a new defender of the Fearscape. She picks a storyteller to protect us from the world of our own stories. And unfortunately, she enlists Henry Henry, thinking that he is actually Arthur Proctor, like the best-selling author of our era. And it's an enjoyable story. The artwork is it's written by Ryan O'Sullivan and artwork by Andrea Moody. We've seen these kinds of stories before. You know, Neil Gaiman's explored it a lot. Stephen King actually explores it a lot, where you are taking a look at where fiction and reality intersect. But I love the way this story is set up, because now our protagonist is this loathsome creature who really needs to be put down. He's more interested in glorifying himself and putting on the role, creating the fiction that he's actually a writer. And he's going into this realm where all this fiction and reality overlap, and if it seeps out, it will destroy us. So this fraud has been enrolled in protecting us from our own storytelling device, and those layers are really fascinating to me. Unfortunately, it's only running 5 issues, which was kind of a downer when I discovered that, because I see its potential for going further. Also, I wouldn't have bought the individual issues, because I think as a standalone graphic novel, it's going to be a really powerful and enjoyable story, an enjoyable read, and I highly recommend it. Get the graphic novel. Don't worry about getting the individual issues.
Would you say fans of books like Unwritten would probably like?
I skipped over my little mention of Unwritten, but yeah, it reminds me a lot of Unwritten. I read Unwritten from beginning to end. That's Mike Carey who wrote that. Yeah, you would appreciate it, but I think it takes it a little bit further. Unwritten is about the intersection of literary figures passing to and fro from the realm of creation to the realm of reality. This is something else. This has something more to do with the lies that we tell ourselves and the stories we tell ourselves. Mm-hmm.
Quick shout out to Vault. They donated 20 sets of their current trade paperbacks in print to our nonprofit, C4C3.
Ooh. Dang.
So that we can hand them out to educators, kind of high school level and above. And we have been doing that. So they were very generous and did us a solid.
Cool. I love both the books of theirs that they've been publishing on These Savage Shores and Fearscape, and I really need to read more of the titles that they're publishing.
Heathen is finally coming back.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would definitely recommend reading the volume one of that.
Okay, yeah. It's cool. Good.
Cool. All right, Fearscape. Thank you, Cole.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm. Chris Cassell, what do you got for us?
I read Pilu of the Woods, which is a new all-ages book that came from Oni Press by Mai K. How do you pronounce it? Nguyen. And so I picked it up because I really like her art style, and I got a feeling that this might be a really good book for educators, and I loved it. It's basically follows this young girl who has difficulty processing her grief and her anger because she's lost her mother, and she gets in a fight with her sister who's like, she blames is trying to act like her mother, and she runs into the woods, and she comes across a spirit of the forest who was lost, and it's another little girl, and they basically become friends, and she's trying to help the spirit find her home, and she has an idea where it is because it's the same place her mother used to take her. And it's basically all about confronting all your deep depressions and your anxieties and not bottling them away because they turn into more terrible monsters. And if you just listen to them and deal with them. So it's a story about, you know, grief and working through all this process. So it's just was really, really sweet and well done. And it gives you a recipe for mushroom rice at the end.
You like those books that have recipes in them.
I do. So yeah, it's a really sweet book for $17.99. Nice hardcover edition. There's a soft cover as well. I'd like to give the hardcover to the educators because it will last longer.
Yeah.
And I cannot say, it got me a little verklempt throughout it. And it's just very heartfelt. So yeah.
Cool. I think if you go with the soft cover, it's $5 less. I think it's $12.99.
Yeah, which is a pretty good deal.
But yeah.
But five extra bucks gives you something sturdy.
Yeah.
Yes.
For lots of rereading.
Mm-hmm. You can build a little book fort with that.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Pile Over the Woods. Thank you, Chris. And finally, Nicole, what do you got for us?
I read the new Marvel Rising number one title, and this is written by Nyla McCruder, the artist by Roberto Di Salvo, and the color artist is Rochelle Rosenberg. And this original team showed up in the Marvel, was it also Rising?
Marvel also Rising.
Marvel also Rising. But it was solicited in a really weird way. It was like a number of one-shots with like a, yeah.
And it was messy.
So if you want to read that, I would definitely recommend reading that in a collected graphic novel, which is available everywhere. This one has that same team with Kamala Khan, Squirrel Girl, Captain, wait, there's different people on here than there's inside. Hold on, let me read the inside. Dorian Green, Tippy Toe, who's like the most important character, Kamala Khan, Miles Morales, and Dante Pertuis, who's the Incredible Inferno, if you don't know. So it starts off with them fighting cars that seem to be possessed. And in the meantime, they were trying to do like a college tour, which Kamala Khan set up because she's dealing with what some superheroes deal with when they're teenagers is like, what's next for me? You know, what's next for Kamala? What's next for Miss Marvel? I don't know what I'm doing with my life, but all my friends seem to know what's going on. So you get a lot of like slice of life stuff happening within the little superhero team. And the main antagonist in this who is summoned by a bunch of teenagers is Morgan Le Fay. So you can look forward to having more Morgan if you missed her. They made an interesting asterisk of like, hey, she's been in Weird World for a while, which feels really, really long ago to have not had Morgan Le Fay pop up. Because Weird World was one of the offshoot stories of Secret Wars, Hickman's Secret Wars from many, four, five, four?
2015. I know
he
that
remembers it well.
It left a permanent scar on my psyche. So yes, yeah.
Yes. So it's been quite a while.
There was a second
true.
World. So we're talking like 2017 or 2018 then.
Okay, so maybe I'm just forgetting about that one then.
Right.
Yeah. So overall, I think like if you like that team up, I would definitely recommend it. It's still got the characters really well, and it has that like slice of life superhero stuff going on as well as a ton of action.
Is there not an animated series with all these characters?
Yeah, Marvel HQ on YouTube. You can watch the Marvel Rising stuff where Kamala and Doreen team up, and it's super, super good. So it's rated teen. You could probably start middle school-ish if they're interested, but since they're talking about college, they might not. I don't know. So it just depends on the interest, but maybe not as much for young kids, not just for interest factor, but... Meh. They always put teen on stuff, but I feel like that's flexible.
Sure. Yeah. It's all flexible.
So you've seen the YouTube cartoon.
Yes.
Do you now read their voices in the cartoon voices that you've heard?
Very rarely do I hear voices in my head.
Because when I read comics, I have to make up, I have to choose an actor to hear that character.
See, and I'm terrible with remembering actors because they're playing a character, so I remember the character and not the actor. And all white boys are like Chris's, so it's like I don't know what to do
in
anymore.
The Marvel universe, yes.
Yeah. Very rarely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It would be really hard, I think, to keep up a Doreen voice in my head.
Yeah,
because she's high voltage, man.
I think that's one of my only things about watching that. I was like, I don't know if I quite down with her voice over everybody.
And she's the actress that's going to be playing the live action Doreen. Right. I don't know how that'll change, but
yeah. I think I also had a voice in my head with Doreen way ahead of time too. So
yeah,
there are times where you have your casting, and there's very few times where the real casting will beat it out.
Right,
you know? Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
There was a short-lived Marvel MMO game, Marvel Omega or whatever, and the Squirrel Girl voice I thought was pretty spot on. And she just goes, "Hi, I'm Squirrel Girl." It was pretty cute.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the voice that I would have if I had Doreen.
Gotcha.
All right, cool. Marvel Rising number one. Thank you, Nicole. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. I almost said however you get your comics, but we're a podcast, not a comic. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com, and our friends get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time this week. The questions come to us from me.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, we all know that mainstream I'm going to start that again. Yeah, we all know that mainstream media takes a lot of inspiration from comic books, but that pipeline goes both ways, don't you know? Here are five characters who first appeared in television and radio who made the jump into the comics, and I'll tell you this now, none of the answers include Harley Quinn.
Oh!
Number one, with personalities based on Donnie and Marie Osmond, this purple-cladded duo and their pet monkey first appeared on ABC's The All-New Super Friends Hour in 1977. Found their way into the DC Universe in Extreme Justice number 9 in October 1995. In 2019, Mark Russell and Stephen Byrne gave the brother and sister a new leash on life with their own title, Say It Together.
Wonder Twins.
Wonder Twins it is. Number 2, originally introduced in Batman the Animated Series, this wife of Dr. Freeze jumped into the pages of Batman with 1997's Batman, Mr. Freeze. She resurfaced again in the pages of Batgirl number 70 in 2006, but this time as the supervillainous Lazara. Or Lazara, I think is probably how you pronounce that. Lazara. Able to conjure flame and raise the dead. I'm not even going to go into what happened to her during the New 52.
Not Nora.
It is Nora. Nora Freeze.
I don't know. Yeah, a first name basis. Nora.
Nora.
What are you doing, Nora?
What are you doing here? Number 3, originally appearing in the radio serial The Adventures of Superman in 1940, this no-nonsense editor-in-chief of the Daily Planet showed up again later that year in Superman number 7.
Is this not Perry White?
It is Perry White.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize they introduced him in the radio show.
Yeah. Number 4. Originally a clone and later the adopted daughter of Wolverine. Number 4. Originally a clone and later the adopted daughter of Wolverine, this character first appeared in the X-Men Evolution TV series in 2003, landing in the comic pages in 2004 in the NYX series.
X-23
or Laura Kinney. Is it pronounced NYX or Nix? I don't know.
We've had this discussion.
Have we?
Yeah.
I always thought it was NYX.
Oh, I always thought it was Nix.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you know, let us know at perfectmompodcast@gmail.com. And finally, number 5, debuting in 19... 19-
1981 on the NBC animated television series Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, she has the ability to generate and manipulate microwave radiation, allowing her to fly and create intense heat and flames. The 2006 title Spider-Man Family, Amazing Friends established her in continuity as the founding member of the New Warriors. She has also been a member of the Hellions, the Avengers, and the X-Men.
Firestar?
Firestar is the correct answer.
That's best, yeah. I look at you, I'm just like, Firestar.
I know, you're like, what are you talking about, girl? Claws?
Anyway, so that's quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.